Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to another episode of Cousins for Christ, where we're three cousins who like to get together and talk about Christ. Joined by my cousins, Chris.
Hello.
My cousin, Jeremy.
Hello there.
I'm Jeff. Hello. It's good to be with you guys.
Yeah, I missed you guys.
Yeah, good to be back. Back as a threesome.
I heard I sounded great while I was out, though.
You just had him over great over the phone.
Well, we're going to be talking about Samson today. We're going to continue our study of interesting Bible characters and interesting Bible stories, and I think this certainly applies.
Yes.
We're talking about Samson. For those of you who may be following along with us or want to follow along later, we'll be taking our text today from Judges chapter 13 through 16. Mm-hmm. Since that's four chapters, we're not going to do a verse-by-verse study of this, but we'll just kind of pick along as we go and hit the high points and see when we're done with our discussion if we could come out with some things of benefit.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. I am. I'm excited.
Well, what do you think of when you first think of Samson?
Think of his strength and his long hair, because that's what you told about as a kid. Yep. That's what you knew. I remember a show that come on Michael Landon did that was based on Samson in the 80s, a made-for-TV movie, where he could throw a javelin further because he wouldn't cut his hair.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know. Michael Landon was what? Little House on the Prairie, right?
Yes.
Highway to Heaven?
Was he on the...
Bonanza?
There you go. That's the one I was thinking of, Bonanza. Yep.
I'd seen everything Michael Landon had ever been in.
Yeah, he did. It was a made-for-TV movie.
Well, yeah, so most people, when they think of Samson, you know, strength, very strong, they think of the hair. We're going to dig a little deeper. There's a lot more to the person than just that.
And I know I was saying this earlier, but when we get into these characters, you see how flawed they are, and we're going to learn. Like, it's not just strength and a jawbone. And
there's no question Samson was flawed.
Yes.
We're all flawed.
Oh, yes. But it's how God uses them.
That may be a recurring point today is... Even though we're flawed, even though we're sinful, can God still use us to accomplish His will? And we'll answer that at the end. So, again, let's just, in verse, chapter 13 of Judges, kind of starts off, there's a woman there. She's unnamed, but she's barren. She has a husband, his name's Manoah.
Good pronunciation on that.
Yes.
I think it's Manoah.
I believe you. You sound good.
But an angel of the Lord came to her and let her know, "Behold, you are barren and have not borne children, but you shall conceive and bear a son." And it says in verse 5, "For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. No razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb. And he shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines." So if you go back to verse 1 of this chapter, it says the people of Israel... did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord gave them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. So they're under the hand of the Philistines. So this God's going to allow this woman to conceive a son, and he's going to deliver them, or begin. That may be important in this context.
It is.
He's beginning. He doesn't completely do this throughout the story, but that's his purpose. So God has a purpose for him. And as we mentioned there, he was going to be a Nazarite from birth. So, guys, what does it mean to be a Nazarite?
Ooh, I got this one. A Nazarite is a person who takes on a vow. It says prescribed in Numbers, verse 6, 2 through 21. The term denotes someone who is separated from others and consecrated to God. Key characteristics of a Nazarite include uncut hair, abstinence from wine, and avoiding close contact with the dead.
Anything different, Jeremy?
No, just a razor to the head, which I think you said is cutting the hair.
Yeah, it said... abstain, uncut hair.
That pretty much echoes what I had, Chris. So, to be a Nazarite, it sounds like you're a person who's taken this vow to separate yourself from the world. You're going to be a servant to God, right?
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind as we continue down through talking about Samson. So, here's another example of a woman who was barren, but yet the Lord is going to allow her to conceive. Do we have any other examples in the Old Testament that you can think of where this occurred?
In the Old Testament?
Or any, wherever.
Wife. Yeah, well, you got Sarah.
Yeah.
You got...
which was Abraham's wife. Now, how old was Sarah? Do you remember?
90.
90 years old? I think he was 100.
She was in her 90s, for sure.
Yeah, she'd already given up on giving giving birth.
Yeah, she laughed. She yeah. mocked. She, yeah.
That's the first one that came to mind. Do you uh-huh. have any others?
The top of my
what
head.
About Samuel? Remember Hannah? His mother?
That's right.
She was barren, and she prayed to God. But anyway, the point I was trying to make here is that I just made a little note that, you know, through God, all things are possible.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and I would like to point out, if you just said New Testament, I would have jumped right on it.
Please do. I'm not aware
Mary,
of the New Testament.
Mary, I was going to say Mary.
Okay. Maybe the most obvious one. Yeah. Okay. That went right
can't
over
see
me.
See the forest for the trees.
I really can't. I cannot. So, you nailed me on that.
I'm not thinking of anybody else, no.
Yeah. So anyway.
John the Baptist's wife, mother also.
Okay.
She was buried.
Yeah, right on. Good one.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There are examples of that going on. Jumping to verse 13, it warns, says, the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, of all that I said to the woman, let her be careful. She may not eat of anything that comes from the vine, neither let her drink wine or strong drink or eat any unclean thing. All that I commanded her, let her observe. I just made a note there. That kind of hit me. Angel of the Lord said to Manoah, of all I said to the woman, let her be careful. Why is it important, do you think, for her to be careful?
Because God thought it was important for her to be careful.
God had plans.
Yeah.
God had specific plans, and he knew he was going to set Samson to.
He'll set him apart.
I kind of project that to modern day times. Like all of us, when God makes a commandment to us, should we be careful how we approach that? Should we be careful how we live our lives to make sure that we're not violating what God's will is?
Yeah.
Well, 100%.
If you were to be pleasing in God's sight.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a lot of stories where people turn from God and it didn't work out well for them.
And I think we're reading one here.
I think you can look in your own life when I haven't been living according to God's plan, that my life has been a little bit more difficult than it
should
be. No
question. So we're going to jump ahead. So anyway, Samson was born to this lady that's unnamed. Verse 24 of chapter 13. And the woman bore a son and called his name Samson. And the young man grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him and Manahedon between Zorah and Eshtaol. I made a note here. Spirit of the Lord. Why is this important? Why is it significant to this story?
Because it's directly from the Lord. The Spirit of the Lord was bringing the Lord's word.
Do you think it's also like a foreshadowing of the three, like the Holy Spirit or something like that?
We need to touch on that topic one day, too.
Yeah, that it could be like, you know, you've got the mention of the Lord, and you've also talked about the Spirit of the Lord, that it could be the foreshadowing of.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show when I read it that way.
Was it Jesus before he was Jesus? I mean, he's always been Jesus, but he probably didn't go by the Jesus. That was his earthly name. But yeah, I mean, it very easily could have been the angel of the Lord.
Good points. One thing I took out of that is the Spirit of the Lord. Every time we read about Samson, every time we read about a feat of strength, there's something incredible that he did. It mentions in this text, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, rushed upon him. God provides our strength.
Oh, yeah.
You think he was reaching like something you'd call like an epiphany or something like that? Or did he just like, when he said it was rushed upon him, that he was...
Well, we know and we're going to get to that when he kills the lion, how... Spirit of the Lord came upon him.
For to do the acts he did, he would have had to have help from God.
And nowhere that he talked about in the acts that we're going to go through, was there ever any doubt from him?
No.
Like in chapter 14, verse 6, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. And although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion in pieces as one tears a young goat. So as we continue through here, we're going to pick up in chapter 14. So... Samson, what do you guys think? I made a note here. He makes poor choices regarding women. Yes or no?
I think that's a common theme with part of his story.
I think he makes a lot of poor choices. I think his arrogance gets the best of him. His pride gets the best of him from time to time.
Jeremy, can you read Deuteronomy 7, verses 3 and 4?
Go ahead, Chris.
So, Samson made poor choices regarding women. We're about to talk about, and specifically regarding Philistine women. Chris, can you read Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 3 and 4?
Absolutely. You should not intermarry with them, giving your daughters to their sons or taking their daughters for your sons, for they would turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord would be kindled against you, and he would destroy you quickly.
So here we have Samson. Again, if you're following along with us in verse chapter 14, Samson went down to Timnah, and at Timnah he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. Then he came up and told his father and mother, I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. His father and mother said to him, is there not a woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all our people that you must go to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? But Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she is right in my eyes. What do you take from that? Now, his mother and father are kind of warning him against this.
Mm-hmm.
But what does he say at the end of the day there? Get her for me, for she is right in my eyes. What's wrong with that, Chris?
Oh, well, I mean, it speaks of, just like in the verse, that it switches. It gives more of an opportunity for him to fall away from God. But one of the things I would mention as parents, you just said that they would mention, was the fact that what did God say? Be careful with him. And that, to me, is them being very careful with his path.
I would say it made him self-centered.
Oh, I think he's very self-centered when it comes to...
You know, we're warned in the New Testament about, you know, what the lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. excuse me. Here I see Samson. Basically, I saw her. She appeals to me. She's happy. You know, she's right in my eyes. I don't care what God says about it. She's right in my eyes, so he's putting himself first.
There are times where his vow takes a back seat to what his.
Do you ever see a single point anywhere in this story about Samson where he even exercised anything about a vow? I don't see where he's got a vow to anything.
He almost comes across as the little girl in Willy Wonka that I want it and I want it now. Get it for me. Oh, he kind of comes off very spoilt right here.
It really is.
And very self-centered.
As we get further in the text later, you know, there's Delilah. We also know that Samson slept with prostitutes. So to me, it's a lot of, I think he's all about self-gratification.
Would you say that he's very carried by his emotions?
I think he's
kind of an emotional.
His desires. Instead of emotions.
I say for desires, anything that's not like a clear thing or to stick with his vow, that he's very driven by his
emotions, almost seems
desires.
Whatever Samson wants, regardless of the consequences, that's what he gets. Mm-hmm. But we all know, too, and another lesson that we're going to take out of this study of Samson is sometimes if you get what you want, you got to take the consequences with it.
Yeah.
You know?
That is
So we're going to read a little bit further. We're going to discuss his first feat of strength. And that's discussed in chapter 14, 5, and 6. That Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah, and they came to the vineyards of Timnah. And behold, a young lion came toward him roaring. Then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. And although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion in pieces as one tears a young goat. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked to the woman, and she was right in Samson's eyes. So, again, as we mentioned earlier, says the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. There was nothing he couldn't do, but the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. You could say the same for us, but you guys know anything about lions?
I'm not fighting one. I'll tell you that.
No.
I mean, the ability for a person, regardless of your stature, to kill a lion, a male lion.
Even a young one.
Even. Just with your bare hands, no weapons. I mean, that shows you right there the power of God. So, what's interesting is that after he kills this lion, he comes back. Let's just keep reading a little bit here. After some days, he returned to take her, being the girl from Timnah. And he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. He He scraped it out onto his hands and went on, eating as he went. And he came to his father and mother and gave some to them, and they ate. But he did not tell them that he had scraped the honey from the carcass of the lion. Let me ask you guys a question. To me, that's a little strange. I don't think that a hive of bees is normally going to start making honey within a carcass of something that is going to be decomposing and whatnot. But what's even more, something I pondered is like, so it says he scraped it out into his hands and he went on, continued moving forward, eating as he went. How would that work? He had enough left over that he was still able to feed it to his mom and dad.
They were thinking about honeycomb too.
Can we think? But that's probably right. I have a question for you guys. Maybe clears up.
That's right.
What's the time span of this? That he just kills it and then the bees.
He just said it's just verse 8. So he doesn't
really focus on that.
He says after some days, Chris. That's all the specificity that we're given. But picking up in verse 10 here, we're still in chapter 14. His father went down to the woman. And Samson prepared a feast there, so the young men used to do. So it appears that was a custom of young men in that time frame. Verse 11, as soon as people saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. And Samson said to them, let me now put a riddle to you. If you can tell me what it is within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes. But if you cannot tell me what it is, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes. So, the men there at the feast said, put your riddle, that we may hear it. And he said to them, here's the riddle. Out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. I think I'd be hard-pressed to probably come up with that one. Maybe any of them, but nonetheless, this is the riddle of the seven-day feast. So, what'd these men do? Could they figure it out, guys?
No,
they shouldn't.
I mean, how can you figure out something that's so specific to... He didn't even tell his parents about it.
Didn't tell his parents, and it mentioned that specifically, but
yeah.
It says, in 3 days, seven-day feast, says, in 3 days, they couldn't solve the riddle. So, on the fourth day, and here's where we fall back on how Samson made poor choices. He married outside of his... his people, I guess,
yeah.
Which, again, in Deuteronomy, they were warned about. It says, in 3 days, they couldn't solve the riddle. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband to tell us what the riddle is, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Wow, that's okay.
Escalated really quickly.
Yeah, I think they're pretty serious about these 30 changes of linen and so forth. But anyway... I'm trying to see how deeply to go into this or to gloss over. So, yeah, I mean, threatening to burn people in their homes, that may encourage you to try to get answers.
Does that show the value of how many 30 garments were or just how little they value this woman and her father?
I think it is going to show us more here, like what she does to Samson, how he reacts to what she does. So, basically... picking up in verse 16. Samson's wife wept over him and said, you only hate me. You don't love me. You have put a riddle to my people, and you have not told me what it is. And he said to her, behold, I have not told my father nor my mother. And shall I tell you? So she wept before him the 7 days that the feast lasted. And on the seventh day he told her, because she pressed him hard. So this woman was able to finally, this started on the fourth day, so... Four more days later of having to listen to her, he gave up. He broke down. He told her. So what happens then? She runs right back to her people and basically betrays him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the men of the city, after they found out what the riddle was, came down on the seventh day. We're in verse 18. Men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? There it is. He said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. Again, guys, verse 19. And the Spirit of the Lord did what?
Rushed upon him.
And he went down and struck down 30 men of the town and took their spoil and gave the garments to those who had told the riddle. In hot anger, he went back to his father's house. So, here we see again, the Lord, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and he's able to do what?
Anything he wants.
Pretty much. And in this case, he did what? He killed 30 men.
He got the 30 pieces of garment.
And you think that's a funny way to give it back to him? Like, okay, you won. You solved the riddle. But the way you're going to get these changes, these garments and changes of linen, I'm going to kill your own people.
This is just a common thing. People are getting what they're asking for in this. And they got to be careful what they're asking for. They got their 30 pieces of garment.
They got it.
He got his wife.
Didn't specify how. Jeremy?
He didn't take those clothes off of those people while they're living. Therefore, by removing those clothes, he just touched dead bodies.
Yeah, of course.
Which went away against the Nazarite.
And we see all through this that there's no commitment by Samson to any kind of a vow. But before we move forward, so after he killed these people, it says in hot anger. What does it mean when you're in hot anger, Chris?
Just rage. To me, it's just like unbridled rage. Yeah.
He left in hot anger and went back to his father's house. So basically, he abandoned his wife. And it says in verse 20, and Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man. So, whatever.
A good best man.
Again, like Chris said, I guess you're reaping what you sow.
They all are. But no, so far, all the stuff you see, he's not beholding to his vow at all. That's a really good point.
Reach to God.
This is just God.
He's kind of relying on his own self-strength, his strength himself. He's never reached out to God so far.
God's
reached out to him, but...
You're right. Keep that in mind, though. So what you're saying right now, he's depending more on the physical strength he's getting from God, would you say, not so much the spiritual strength?
Yes.
I wouldn't see... That's why I'm... said he's just full of emotion. There's no...
Has he called upon God on any of this yet?
Not yet. But file that away.
Some foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, says that we're starting in chapter 15. So after some days at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson went to visit his wife with a young goat. Make of that what you will. I think he just had a goat with him. And he said, I will go into my wife in the chamber. But guess what happened, guys?
Wife's already married.
They've already given her away to his companion. Verse 2, her father said, I really thought that you utterly hated her, so I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Please take her instead. Samson said to them, this time I shall be innocent in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. So, pick it up in verse 4. Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches. And he turned them tail to tail and put a torch between each pair of tails. And when he had set fire to the torches, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and set fire to the stacked grain and the standing grain, as well as the olive orchards. I'm just going to throw this at him. How hard must that be to capture 300 foxes? I've seen like less than 20 in my lifetime.
Man, this is where they was hunted down, maybe over there.
You think the Spirit of the Lord blessed him in that endeavor?
I thought this was really clever. I mean, it's probably not the best, but I thought what he did was pretty clever to go through and set them loose to burn. Like
in verse 4 too, it doesn't tell us like how long did it take Samson to get 300 foxes, and were they going to stand still while he tied a burning thing between their tails? Anyway, I just thought that was kind of neat. But anyway, Samson basically, I mean. We're at a time where these are agricultural societies. Agrarian? Is that the right word for that? Agrarian
sounds
society?
Good to me.
I may be wrong.
Sounds right.
Sometimes I'm wrong. Just see what it feels like. But I mean, this is their food supplies, right?
This is very, very serious.
Yes.
This is probably their economy for that little small place. It's
very,
probably
very serious.
It cripples. Yeah. It cripples.
But then the Philistines said, who has done this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite. Because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion. What do they do? It says the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire.
Oh, wow.
So they actually did get burned alive. Now, it doesn't say they were killed. I'm assuming they were. But burned her and her father with fire. And Samson said to them, if this is what you do, I swear I will be avenged on you. And after that, I will quit. It says in verse 8 of chapter 15, and he struck them hip and thigh with a great blow, and he went down and stayed in the cleft of the rock of Edom. So, I don't know how many men were killed here. He struck them with hip and thigh. Struck them hip and thigh with a great blow. I'm not even sure what that... What do you think that means? My study Bible says the exact meaning of this idiom is obscure. Perhaps it means Samson left his enemies lying on the ground in a tangled jumble of legs and thighs?
Probably.
That'd be a rough sight to see, wouldn't it?
Well, have you ever seen a Flintstone when they got into a fight, him and Dino was fighting, wrestling each other, and a big old ball of smoke come up?
Hip and thigh, adverb, in a fierce or ruthless manner.
Wasn't pretty?
It was not. He went full rage again.
You think, hot anger may have been hot involved anger, here again.
Yes. I'd say he dealt
Which
with
is
a
not
lot of anger.
To be confused with righteous anger.
No.
So, the next chapter is, after Samson has burned down the Philistines' fields and destroyed their economy and their grains and all this, we pick up in verse 9. It says, the Philistines came and encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why have you come up against us? They said, well, we have come up to bind Samson, to do to him as he did to us. It says, then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom, where Samson was, and said to him, do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so I have done to them. What we've got here is basically the Philistines have showed up. I'm like, guys, there's going to be a reckoning here. Either you guys get Samson and turn him over to us, or, you know, there's going to be repercussions.
Right.
So the men of Judah, they take 3,000 men, and they go down to, they find Samson.
They're
going to
do their own hip and thigh.
They found him down there where he's camped in Edom. So they said to him, back in verse 12, we have come down to bind you that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines. And Samson said to them, swear to me that you will not attack me yourselves. They said to him, no, we will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will surely not kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. So what's the significance of a new rope? Mm-hmm. It's just stronger, right?
Yeah.
That's probably the strongest material
been, like,
they had.
Wet or like deteriorated.
I don't know
or...
if back then they had chains yet or not, but I guess they did. But so anyway, the men of Judah, his people, have bound him with new ropes. When he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him. Then the Spirit of the Lord did what?
Come upon him.
It rushed upon him. So I think it's important. It didn't just come upon him. They specifically say it rushed upon him. And these new ropes that they just put on him. It says, and the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that had caught fire, and his bonds melted off his hands. Do you know what flax is? Anybody?
I don't. I know flax seed is some kind of
thing
or whatever.
So anyway, it said his bonds melted off his hands like flax that had caught fire. Flax being a material made out of plants. Yeah. I'm assuming once that catches fire, it'd be very easy for that just to be separated. But the point I'm getting is like, you know, these new ropes, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and these new ropes, he snapped them like nothing. He said he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey and put out his hand and took it, and with it he struck 1,000 men. And Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps. With the jawbone of a donkey have I struck down 1,000 men. As soon as he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone out of his hand, and that place was called Ramathlehi. I made another point here. So he's just killed 1,000 men. Now, you asked me earlier, was there ever an example within this story of where Samson calls upon the Lord? Well, he does in verse 18. It says, he was very thirsty, and he called upon the Lord. You've granted me this great salvation by the hand of your servant. And again, he calls on the Lord, and in the same verse, he calls himself a servant of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first record I see that of him doing that. You've granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant, and shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of their uncircumcised? So, God provides him with water.
How do you guys take the way that he asks, or the way that that's written? Like, do you see that as like a, I don't know. Sometimes I, don't know I read these that I'm like.
Like what was his attitude? Was he telling the Lord? Well, it says he asked.
Somebody said it like that to me, I would be okay, like, well, he didn't that say was
he
very. Asked.
Said he was thirsty and he called upon the Lord. It could have been like and the question is like, you've granted me this great salvation. This great salvation by the hand of your servant, and shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?
Sounds a little bit sarcastic, the way I'm reading it.
I'm starting to see some hints of Jesus Christ here, where it says, you've granted this great salvation through me. Shall now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised.
I mean, you got to think. So you played football.
A long time ago.
After you get off field, how thirsty would you be? Now think about
pretty
this.
Pretty thirsty, yeah.
He just killed 1,000 men with a donkey jawbone.
Yeah, no, I understand. He's
I don't
thirsty.
Think I could kill Chris right now.
He's probably wore out. And
I'm
probably
sure
like,
he is. But
isn't a jawbone kind of like a boomerang looking kind know. Of got a curvature to it? I don't know. Yeah.
So here's a quick question, if you guys. So he's using this imperfect man. Who are the Philistines?
That's a good question.
Their enemy.
Who are? But why? Why would we be?
Okay, so nobody really knows where the Philistines come from. A lot of speculation. Some people think that maybe they were the sea people that just drifted in and took over this region. But nobody really knows where they come. They don't know if they came from the east. They don't know if they were the sea people. Nobody really knows where they come from. But they do know that they were there. That is the question that maybe we should have a thing on, a podcast on one time.
Do you know, like, a brief of why are they the enemies of God?
Yeah, because they're trying to take over Israel and that whole region over there.
People of war is the one thing that I've read, that they're trying to take over Israel.
That's the whole thing. That's why a lot of people speculate maybe they were the sea people that they talked about. Is that they would come in, and what they would do is they would just take over. They didn't really fight at the sea like they would. They would actually just use boats to come in.
Kind of like Vikings? Or
exactly like Vikings. And they would take over and just had to take the region area and take all the spoils.
But I think you need to understand this. I guess I didn't ask it until I read through it. It's like, all right, what did the Philistines do? If you're just reading this or just hearing this for the first time, why does God have it out for the Philistines?
Okay,
you know
so,
that he's using an imperfect man.
Well, the enemy of his people, the Israelites.
Correct. Yeah. So that's the answer. So
that's what you need to know.
Yeah.
When Daniel got taken, Israel got taken by Nebuchadnezzar and them, and Darius and all of them, you know, from Babylon, the Lord okayed it, right?
Right.
This is the one coming in against the Lord's will.
Okay.
That's why he's rising up Samson to take him out.
And you just don't want to hear that, like, all right, what is God picking this dude who's an imperfect to go against the Philistines?
Everybody in the Bible. There's only one perfect person in the Bible. Everybody else he used from Moses, who was a murderer. You know, Abraham lied about his wife twice. You know, they're
David.
All David. Yeah. David was pretty much a murderer. Everybody's imperfect in the Bible other than Jesus.
Yeah, and I just want to get that you keep hearing the Philistines and you're like, all right, well, why? So sorry.
And I'd like to have a discussion on the Philistines one time, this whole episode. It would be fascinating.
Well, there you go. Got a new topic. All right, Jeff, sorry.
Sorry, Jeff.
No, good stuff, man. So we're picking up in verse chapter 16. It's where Delilah gets introduced into the equation. So right off the bat, it says in verse 1 of chapter 16, Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute and went into her. So, again, his choices in women, I don't think he really cares.
No. He sees it, he wants it.
It's the old, if it feels good, do it kind of thing.
Makes
if it looks good, go after it.
I think you hit the head right there.
And we're going to, you know, very quickly here find out what happens to him, but the Gazites were told, Samson has come here. So they surrounded the place and set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They kept quiet all night, saying, let us wait till the light of the morning, then we'll kill him. Samson laid on midnight. At midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the gate of the city. We're about to get into the second recorded feat of strength. And there is a third, but let us wait till the light of morning and then we'll kill him. Verse 3, but Samson laid on midnight, and at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and pulled them up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill in front of Hebron. My notes here say that city gates in Bible times are often very elaborate. Many of them are two stories high or even higher. I'm like, so he takes the gate, the two columns beside it, rips them out of the ground, throws them on his shoulders, and walks up a hill. I mean, that sounds like a feat of strength, Chris.
Yeah, a little bit.
But so he destroys the gate of the city. So there's that. Picking up in verse 4. Says, after this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. We're going to talk about Delilah, but do you know anybody, any women named Delilah, Chris? Jeremy?
I don't.
You know, it's funny. I don't see a lot of Delilahs and Jezebels anywhere nowadays.
No. I don't even see a lot of Bathshebas, but...
No, I don't either that.
I don't think if you named your daughter Delilah, that's really complimentary.
No?
There's not a lot of... Well...
Well, anybody that knows a little bit of the history, you don't...
I would dare say there's probably a Delilah out there.
There's no question. I'm sure there is.
Wait, what's the name of that lady that does like the late night talk show?
That's Elvira.
Yeah,
it's Elvira. No. The one that's like, isn't there Delilah that does like people call in and talk to her about a problem?
Chris, are you talking about the after hour stuff?
Not that late. Supposed to be. No, definitely.
You know, we talked about, you're not watching, you got to stop watching that, Chris.
My bad, guys.
So,
need to turn back.
There you go. He's fallen in love with yet another Philistine woman. What happened? It didn't work out too good with the first one.
No,
didn't. Let's do it again.
For either of them.
Didn't work the first time. Let's move forward. But anyway. So the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, seduce him and see where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him, and we will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So what happens, guys? Do y'all remember that this section here that's verses 5 through 22, more or less?
Yeah, it's basically similar to what happened with the first wife in the riddle.
Well, she wears him down. Yeah. Says, so Delilah said to Samson, tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound that one could subdue you. What are you thinking if a woman comes up to you and is like, tell me your very weakness, Chris, where if I knew it, I could kill you.
How can I rob you? What?
How can I harm you the greatest, Jeremy? So
you're talking about a man that done took out 30 men by hand.
He ain't worried about it, is he?
Took 1,000 men out with a donkey bone.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I mean, he's not, what's he fretting by?
What's the first thing that he tells her? Verse 7. Anybody?
They buy me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak and be like any other man.
So, I'll pick up in verse 8. Then the Lord of the Philistines brought up to her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried. What'd she do?
Bound him.
She binds him up with them. Then she had men lying in ambush in an inner chamber, and she said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson! But he snaps the bowstrings as a thread of flax snaps when it touches the fire. So then the secret of his strength was not known. So
that was awesome.
already she took the minute
there's
he told
one.
Her.
There's the one.
Okay,
one. There's
let's do
one.
Number two.
Yeah, let's do number two.
Starting 10, Chris.
Let's see here. Then Delilah said to Samson, behold, you have mocked me and told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound. I think you should have read that with your voice, man, to be honest. And he said to her, starting at 11, he said to her, if they bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man.
Okay.
What does
she
do?
So verse 12. So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And the men lying in ambush were in the inner chamber. But he snapped the ropes off his arms like a thread. Dude. You got me once. Here you come.
Shame on you.
Twice.
Shame on me.
Pick up in 13. There's a third one here, man.
All right.
Who should be more angry, though, really, if you think about it? Shouldn't it be the Philistine men that keep coming out of the tunnel like, how many butt whoopings I got taken?
You're sure this time.
That's
you're
probably
sure.
Right. I mean,
you promise?
Okay, yeah.
And then Delilah said to Samson, until now you've mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound. And he said to her, if you weave the 7 locks of my head with the web and fasten it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak and be like any other man.
So while he slept, Delilah took the 7 locks of his head and wove them into the web. And she made them tight with the pin and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he awoke from his sleep and pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web.
And Steve said, she's wrong again.
Poor Steve
just keeps taking it.
And she said to him, how could you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these 3 times, and you have not told me where your great strength lies.
So, Three times now. So she pressed him hard with her words day after day and urged him till it says his soul was vexed to death, which is what it's coming down to.
This guy can't last 4 days.
Oh, he can't. Let me ask you a question. Couldn't he just get up and go outside? Could he remove himself from... I don't know.
More than thinking about it, I think Jeremy, or in whichever one you said it, that he didn't take this seriously. Like, maybe he was fighting Steve.
Could he have been overconfident?
He could have been overconfident. I was sitting here trying to go, like, why would you trust a woman that's trying to get you?
Yeah, but you know, because he's never been defeated.
Mm-mm. How many times have we been attracted to somebody that's not good for us?
Well, that's true.
I don't tell him how to kill me.
I know, but
we, especially not three times.
It's still
I'm not fighting Steve three nights in a row.
For some, it's a game.
But we see it over and over. Yeah, we see it over and over. Verse 17. He delivers the goods. Here's 17,
and he told her all his heart and said to her, a razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I shall come weak and be like any other man.
Oh, my, my.
Uh-oh. Yeah, here you go.
He finally did it. Verse 18, when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up again, for he's told me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees, and she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Then she began to torment him, and the strength left him. She said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. He awoke from his sleep and said, I will go out at other times and shake myself free. Right there. So even though he told her the truth, he still thought he could get it, right? He had the power. Mm-hmm. He thought the Spirit of the Lord was going to rush upon him again.
Or he just
I will go out at other times and shake myself free.
What does the last part of that verse say? But he did not know that the Lord had left
him. So what happens now? The Philistines seized him, and they gouged out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles. He ground at the mill in the prison. I made a point here. So earlier we talked about how Samson depended on his physical strength, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it ironic? Samson was spiritually weak, but then he also became physically weak.
Mm-hmm.
Samson was spiritually blind, but then he became physically blind.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have Samson, our hero. Well, I stopped short of calling him a hero.
He's at rock bottom anyway.
Somehow, yeah. he just really did not believe that his strength, the Lord wouldn't be with him. Do you think he acknowledged that his strength even came from God?
I think he just took it upon himself because he had it so long that sometimes...
But do you think he acknowledged God for that?
I think...
If he did, he wouldn't have shaved his head. Or he wouldn't have allowed it to happen.
Well, he definitely wouldn't have run out there without him, but...
Yeah.
So, in closing up this, we're going to talk about the latter part of chapter 16 here, starting in verse 23, the death of Samson. So, they're reading all this verse by verse. Basically, Samson had become a source of entertainment.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, the donkey tied up down there doing tricks or the jester. They had him tied up down there. It says in verse 27, now the house was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there, and on the roof there were about 3,000 men and women who looked on while Samson entertained.
Can we go to 23 real quick?
Please,
that
please
says
do.
Here's part of the reason that we get to the Philistines. Now the lords of the Philistines gathered to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice. And they said, "Our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hand."
Good point. They're worshiping a false god. And they're saying even so much that our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hand. Like to say Dagon, this false god, is more powerful than Samson's God.
Correct.
That's what they're basically saying.
Basically. I mean, everything you look, even when we get into David, it's our God versus your God.
We're about to see what happens, though.
Yes.
They got 3,000 men and women on the roof. They're looking down. We're about to get into, Jeremy, the third feat of strength.
Let's do it.
Here again, the second time that Samson calls to the Lord. verse 28. And Samson called to the Lord and said, O Lord God, please remember me and please strengthen me only this once, O God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. Do you think his calling upon the Lord here is different than the one we saw in chapter 15? And
he's more 18? Humbled here.
It says in chapter 15, verse 18, when he was thirsty, he called upon the Lord. Here we're seeing, God, please remember me.
He's pleading. I mean, he realizes where the strength of, you know, before it's like, hey, I'm your number one player. Why are you going to do this? Now it's you're the...
It's almost at this point, would you sense any contrition at all on Samson's part?
I mean, I would say so, because what you're about to say next in verse 30, what he says. So I'll let you read that.
The third feat of strength says, and Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested. So you got these two major columns. This is what is supporting the weight of the entire building, the whole structure. Verse 30, Samson said, Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested, and he leaned his weight against them, his right hand on the one, his left hand on the other. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. Then he bowed with all his strength, and the house fell upon the Lord's and upon all the people who were in it, so that the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he had killed during his life. That pretty much concludes the story of Samson.
I think verse 30 is pretty strong. Let me die with the Philistines. It's almost he took on a sacrifice, and said contrition.
He was willing to go.
A little bit. He was.
And you guys think, what'd you say? That's where all the leaders had gathered, right? Yeah.
For this sacrifice. These people who believed in Dagon.
And so,
his false god.
This is where maybe this was the intention the whole time.
Oh, I agree. It is.
This is how we're going to get it. Because once you destroy the head, the rest goes and flees. I know this wasn't, you know, the last of them, because David ends up still having to fight them. But it wasn't ever near as strong as it was at this point where there was their leaders again.
Jeremy, following right on top of that, was Samson, was this part of God's plan? Was he the instrument of God's will here?
Yes. You know, one reason the Jews don't believe that Jesus was the Messiah is because they thought God was going to give them an earthly king. But that wasn't God's intention. Just because God, you might think, you know, God's intention, the intention might have been like, oh, Samson's going to come and he's going to conquer them physically. And he did in aspects. But in the end, he did it how God wanted it, in chains, bound up, when he brought the building down on all of them. Was that how they pictured it in their head? But no, that's how God did it. And that's what matters, is how God intends it to come about.
Well, what was Jesus' last moment? How was he? He was... bound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you say Samson was a righteous man? I say no.
I would say 99% of his life he was. I think at the end, if you can read that, if let's say he does have the contrition in his voice, maybe at the
end. I'd say at the end,
he had been humbled. Last moment.
At the end, he had been humbled. And it kind of goes with me where people say, can you be saved on your deathbed? Samson was saved on his deathbed right there.
Well, it said that he called upon God,
mm-hmm.
and also that God did, God the strength him. Came upon him again.
Mm-hmm.
So
I see
God
that.
Was with him there in the end.
I mean, it's just at the end, I think, so I agree with you, he was not through 99.9% of his life.
Here's the million-dollar question we're going to wrap up with. Can a sinner still be an instrument of God?
Moses was a sinner. David was a sinner. Abraham was a sinner.
So, yes or no?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Yeah. Even Nebuchadnezzar and him, God used Nebuchadnezzar and him to take down the Jewish people and to conquer them.
We don't always know how God's going to use us. And even if we are sinners, we can still be used. And maybe in this case with Samson, it's not too late.
We all know God's will be done. Now, whether you choose to be a righteous person, like you said, and follow his will, or if he uses sinners, mm-hmm. I mean, or unrighteous people, let's say, because we're all sinners, unrighteous people, he will use them to do good for his people. to enact his plan.
You know, just a good story here. I mean, yeah. Samson, even though he followed after his own selfish lusts and desires, we see how, in the end, God still is able to use Samson to accomplish his purpose. So, good story. There's a lot to unpack in this.
There's a lot. And Samson, we can all relate good to stuff, Samson, man. Because, in a way, we're all Samson. We might not have the strength or the long hair, but we fall short every day.
You know, we talked about in another episode about should you read the Old Testament. One of the reasons we said yes was it's entertaining. Well, here you go. Case in point. It's,
great lessons learned, too.
It is, and how it all connects.
Tell me that's not an entertaining. There's foxes being tied together by their tails with firebrands. People are being slaughtered right and left with jawbones. We get honey out of dead animals.
I tell you what I learned. If a woman comes in my life and demands how to weaken me three times in a row, there won't be a fourth. Yeah. She's gone.
If he had kicked her out after three times on both instances,
hey, Chris,
he'd been
three
fine.
Wrongs don't make a right.
Three wrongs don't make a right. I didn't know. I'll tell you what I learned. I didn't know that Delilah sounded like that.
Yeah, she does.
She did. I did not know.
Fuck me, Samson. Different time, man.
There is different times. Oh,
that was a good one, guys.
That was good.
Where can we be found, Jeremy?
We can find on Facebook. Cousins for Christ, Spotify, YouTube, iPod, or Apple Podcasts, I'm sorry, iHeartRadio. Please, guys, we appreciate y'all so much. If y'all would, give us a like and a share. By the way, to whoever it was that downloaded us so many times in Los Angeles, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. We're moving west, finally. We know we're overseas, but now we're actually starting to venture out west.
It's our manifest destiny.
Through the grace of God.
Yeah.
To God be the glory.
Yes.
Chris, you want to close us out with a word of prayer?
Yes. Dear Father in heaven, we thank you for this beautiful day that you've given us. We thank you for this time that you've allowed us to come together and to learn about some of your lessons in the Bible and that how you use an imperfect people. And we all know that we're imperfect as well. And we pray like that you use Samson, that you will use us to do your bidding and to help bring many of the lost people to be saved, to do the Great Commission and to bring many souls to you so they can have a relationship with you like we do, dear Father. Dear Father, as we go out through this week, we pray that you will guide, guard, and keep us and help bring us back in the next point of time. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.